94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I am Juan Castillo, and of course, this is the Electric Drum. And I have with me in the studio today Sarah Newland, and she's having an event that's going to be happening in our community on November 18th. It's called Living Well, a Gospel Celebration and Community Education event. We're going to talk more about that. But first, let's talk about her. How you doing today?
I'm very well. I'm glad to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Wonderful, wonderful. Listen, talk to me about your life, and you know, this is, you know, this event is something that's very close to you.
Yes,
right?
It is. Yes, it is.
You know, so tell me about how you came about with this event, and tell us about you.
Okay, I was married. I'm the widow of Shep Newland, Sherwin B. Newland. And after my husband died, he died of prostate cancer. And after he died, I wanted very much to get involved in palliative care in the U.S. Palliative care is a kind of care. It's a kind of medicine. It's a supportive medicine that goes along with the curative medicine that one has with various diseases, whether it's heart disease, renal failure, kidney disease, any kind of cancer, but it's there to support the patient and their family as they live with their disease. Mm-hmm. My husband was a physician here in town. He went to medical school here. He trained here. So we've been in New Haven since the beginning of time. And he took care of sick people. And when he was being taken care of for his prostate cancer, he was quite sick, and he had most prostate cancer is sort of it's there and it doesn't kill somebody, but there's some kinds of prostate cancer that are very aggressive, and sadly my husband had a very aggressive cancer, and he suffered as he was being taken care of, suffered with pain. And that kind of pain that a patient has ripples through the family. Everybody wants to help the patient feel better. They want the patient to live their life as close to what it was before they had the disease. And sadly, that kind of support was not being given until one day a friend of mine said, why isn't Shep, that's most my husband's name, why isn't he being seen by the palliative care team at Yale? And at this point, my husband, who had been out of the operating room because he'd started writing books back in the early 90s, he didn't know that there was a palliative service at Yale. Now, he knew what palliative care was, but he didn't know that Yale had one. And the palliative care service at Yale was in its infancy. It was just beginning to grow. And he was referred to the woman who was the chief of the service. Her name's Jen Capo. And we went in to see her, and we got sort of to the head of the line because he was a doctor in town. And, you know, it was one doctor called another doctor. And we got in to see Dr. Capo. And from the moment we were in the hands of Dr. Capo, my husband and my children and I relaxed because all of a sudden we were being taken care of, not the disease, but we as human beings were being taken care of. My husband's discomfort was being addressed, and being addressed in a way that sort of took into consideration all of the medical issues that he had. Modern medicine today is in silos. So you have a cardiologist, and you have a urologist, and you have an OBGYN, and everything's so scientific and so medicalized that those silos don't talk. Mm-hmm. So you can go to see one doctor, and there's no conversation going on between the doctors about the patient. And because of that, an individual becomes their disease, and we're much more complicated than our diseases.
Right.
So after Shep died, I thought, and Shep, again, we got to the head of the line. We got to see Dr. Capo because it was one doctor talking to another doctor. And my feeling was every one of us in this country, every person will at some point have to deal with a major disease themselves or someone in their family that has a major disease. And I don't want people to be reduced to their diseases. I want them to live their lives until they die and live a life that is recognizable, live a life that is celebrated and enjoyed, where there's love and compassion all the way around. So, 2014, I said, all right, we're going to start a foundation. And then we started a foundation, and the foundation is committed to making sure that there are clinicians that understand and are trained in palliative medicine, and more importantly, that the community know what to ask for, to know that they can say, I'd like to see I need a referral to a palliative doctor. Can you do that for me? Which is an easy enough to do. So, for instance, say I were to go in and I was diagnosed with diabetes, and it's serious diabetes, not something that can be easily taken. You know, it's insulin or a variety of ways that diabetes can be taken care of. What would be great on the day that I get that diagnosis, and this is in a perfect world, and if I were queen of the world, this would be the way it would happen.
Yes.
A palliative team member would come and say, here's my card. You're going to have questions. You're going to have questions about talking with your children, talking with your spouse, talking with your parents. You're going to have questions about nutrition. You're going to have questions about how does this get paid for. I am here to help you. I am part of a team that is going to support you as you live with this disease. So.
Okay. So give me some examples, right?
Okay.
Okay. So like you said, you know, someone comes in and they've got, you know, a disease.
Right.
They have to, and it's a serious disease.
A serious disease, exactly.
Okay. And so they get involved with a palliative, you know, team member.
Right.
You know, a doctor that's involved with this team, right? Okay. So besides like that initial,
right,
you know, visit that you mentioned, how else can you give me some instances and some, can you describe,
sure,
to me
absolutely
how that works?
Let me first of all explain what a palliative team is.
Okay.
It would be a clinician. It would be an MD.
Yes.
There would be a physician's assistant on the team. There would be a nurse on the team. There would be a social worker on the team. There,
okay,
would be a chaplain on the team. There would be an art therapist on the team. So all of these people are part of the team that supports the patient and the family with what they're going through. For now, a very good, here's a terrific example. My husband and I I am very fortunate. We have four children, four wonderful, wonderful children. And the social worker at one point checked in with us to see how our children were dealing with the fact that their dad, who was this sort of mighty man who could take care of sick people and write books and be smart and be funny and be a dad, how were our children dealing with the fact that their father had a very, very serious disease that was ultimately going to kill him? And it did kill him. But so it's social work. It could be, for example, if someone with a disease, a serious disease, we can make it. Perhaps it's cancer, and there are small children involved. An art therapist. There was a wonderful story about the art therapist at Yale, who's a very, very gifted woman. The entire team is gifted. This woman worked with the small child of the mom who was in end stage cancer, creating a memory box and working with the child and seeing how the child could express their love, their anxiety, how they're living with the fact that this was a small child, but how are they living with the fact that their mom is not behaving the way she used to when she wasn't sick? You know, so it's that sort of work. Nutritionists.
Okay.
Because some diseases, you have to change the way you eat. We probably all should change the way we eat,
right,
that we. But particular diseases, there are ways that one needs to change the way one eats, and a nutritionist can be a person that helps with that, that can answer the phone and say, maybe you should consider eating X, Y, or Z. Because the concept of a team is every one of those characters is essential in helping the patient and the family live their lives in a way, again, as I said earlier, that's recognizable. So, yeah. So
I'm speaking with Sarah Newlin, and you know, she's having an event, Living Well, a gospel celebration and community education event on November 18th. We're going to talk more about that event, and we're talking about, you know, just when someone has a disease that, you know, they're possibly going to end their life, you know, how do doctors and a team could work with that family and with that patient to make it as best as possible, right?
See, the point is, each of us, if we live long enough, we are confronted with problems.
Yes.
And there are a variety of ways that we solve those problems. And a community helps us live with and work through problems. And what we're doing, what palliative medicine does, is it creates a small community to support the individual and the family so that you can work through problems, questions, anxiety.
And everybody's on the same page.
Everybody's on the same page because it used to be, and my husband used to write about this and talk about this, it used to be many, many years ago, I'll be 70 this year, so probably when I was a little girl, you'd have a family doctor. And the family doctor knew your mother, knew your father, knew your aunt, knew you, and everything was contextualized. There was a context into which you walked with whatever malady you had when you came into a doctor's office. That's not true anymore. We live in super science medicine, so that everything, we think that medicine's an art. It is an art that is supported by science. Science informs the art of medicine. And my husband once said that the primary function of the art of medicine is not to cure disease or to fight death, but to relieve human suffering.
Mm.
And that's what we...
And that's psychological as well as physiological.
Absolutely. And spiritual.
And spiritual.
It's all of that.
And so, I got one question then I got another question.
Okay.
And so now, you said that you and your husband didn't know that this particular service was offered, right?
Right.
You know, and so the only reason that you got it is because you knew, you found out about it, and then you asked for it.
Right.
Okay, so anybody can ask for this.
Absolutely.
Wow. Second question. When doctors are in medical school, right?
Right.
You know, we have a teaching hospital here,
yeah.
Yale New Haven, and we got the medical school and so forth and so on, right? A doctor's being trained in this particular service.
That is a brilliant question. And the answer is they know about palliative medicine. They know about palliative care, and there are some courses in it. But part of what the Newlin Foundation wants to do is to establish a chair in palliative medicine at the medical school. And the dean of the medical school has green-lighted this. Now all we need to do, and this is part of our mission, education is essential on both for clinicians and for the public. But what we need to do is to raise the money to make that chair happen, because if it's part of the curriculum, not sort of an elective, but part of the curriculum in teaching young people in medical school, then it gets downloaded on the hard drive, and you understand more and more. It becomes part. It's part of the curriculum, and it's part of the thinking. I mean, because it's so. We all think that the internet's going to answer all our questions, and boy, is that a fool's errand.
Yeah, Google. Right?
Because Google. Yeah, it, you know, information is not knowledge, and knowledge is not wisdom. And what we're paying for when we support young people who are training in medicine, or they're paying themselves, is we're getting them the information that they can then develop the knowledge, and the experience gives them the wisdom, so they become the kind of physicians that take care of me, Sarah, and you, Juan, and not just our disease.
And you know, it's interesting because, I mean, you know, people always talk about bedside manners, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and when you talk to folks about, you know, their experience, you know, when they go to the hospital and go see a doctor, normally said, well, was he nice, right? Did he make you feel better? And not so much in terms of the disease, but did he make you feel better just because the way that he treated you and the way that he talked to you and so forth and so on? And even if these medical students might not go into work with a team, they come out of that particular class with a perspective that's different, right?
Absolutely. And part of the Newland Foundation is supporting the training and research for clinicians and members of the team for palliative care, and that's a huge part of our mission. There's something called primary palliative care. And the concept of that is that clinicians who are gastroenterologists or cardiologists or internists and have their own specialty, that primary palliative care can help them learn to deliver their own palliative medicine on a particular level. Now, granted, there are times that a palliative team needs to come in because there may be enormous complications with meds and whatnot, and getting all the silos to talk together as a disease can advance.
Yes.
But early on, you know, having clinicians be trained in primary palliative care, then they can deliver, then they're sensitized to the importance of, how are you today? How's your family? How are your kids? When my husband and met Dr. Capo, the day that we went in to see her, and my husband was in enormous pain, and it was very hard, as you can imagine. And Dr. Capo walked into the room, and this woman changed the temperature in the room just by her presence. She didn't sit down at the computer and log on, which most clinicians do, particularly in clinics at major teaching hospitals, because everything's timed. I mean, that's how everything gets paid. And she didn't log in to the computer. She came in, she sat down, she looked my husband in the eyes, and she said, "Dr. Newland, I'm so glad to meet you. Please tell me what's going on." And my son, one of my sons, and I were flabbergasted.
Something as simple as that.
Something as simple as, how are you? Tell me what's going on.
Wow.
Yeah. And this is, and it all, you know, we believe the mythology that science is going to, you know, we're going to beat death. Well, guess what? If we beat death, then the next generations can't come along to stand on our shoulders and have visions into the future.
Now, this particular service, is it just for folks that probably are going to die, or does anybody can ask for that? I mean,
well, here's it has to do with major disease. Has to do with a diagnosis of major disease.
Yes.
So, yes, you can ask for it. Say, as I sort of said earlier, you have diabetes that's going to require serious medication and serious monitoring, and for a variety of reasons. And that's that kind of. It's one thing if you walk into a doctor's office and the doctor says, you have a really bad flu, and you'll be okay in a couple of days. Go home, drink lots of fluid, and take some aspirin. Right. You're going to feel better. But the day that you walk into a doctor's office and everything's okay, but you're feeling a little wonky, some tests are taken, and you walk from, you step from being a healthy person, a person that thinks, I'm okay, you step into the land of disease, that's a moment that is earth-shattering.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I got to say, I got to mention my own experience, right? Okay, so I had colon cancer, right, almost 15 years ago. And it was serious, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I had a big tumor, and I had to get, I had to go into surgery and all of that, right? And then I had preventive chemo after that. You know, and I'm fine now. You know, I beat it. But it's interesting because, you know, this is bringing stuff back for me, right? You know, when I walked out of the office, when I was told that I had it, my first question to my wife was like, wow, I got to put stuff together because I'm going to die, right?
Right.
And, of course, you know, I didn't die. And so my doctor and then, you know, when he made a referral to, you know, to another doctor in terms of you know dealing with the surgery and so forth and so on, right, you know, there was a lot of communication between all of them, right? That's how I beat this, right? In addition to that, you know, my doctor recommended that I go and try to find groups that, you know, folks that, you know, talk about the fact that they've had colon cancer or going through it. And so I was lucky enough that one of my coworkers at the time had went through it himself, and he had some folks that met from time to time to discuss their disease, right?
Right.
So, in a sense, I kind of that happened for me, right?
Yeah.
But it happened happenstance, right? It wasn't like, you know, this was a team.
Sure.
It was just my primary just happened to know this guy that, you know, worked with him. And so forth and so on. So it wasn't, you know, but that helped though, right?
Sure.
And what it did was, I mean, I think that a combination of that, you know, and my spiritual connection, with my religion.
Sure.
You know, cured me, right? You know, and so I could see how important that is, right?
Of course.
Absolutely. Okay, so my next question for you is this, right? How receptive, right, are hospitals and doctors to this concept?
To palliative care?
Yes.
Everything's the bottom line.
Of course.
In the world that we live in today, everything has to do with the bottom line and how is it paid for. And palliative care, let me back up just a second. My husband, in the early 90s, when palliative care started, when it was sort of became this concept of delivering patient care, my husband was one of the people that wrote about it and talked about it and worked.
Oh.
So he knew what palliative care was. He was not ignorant of what palliative care was, but he didn't know that Yale New Haven had a unit.
Right.
But what happened to you, however many years ago it was that you were diagnosed with colon cancer and you were taken care of, your primary doc gave you palliative medicine.
Yes.
And his ability to connect you to more people, the idea of community, and that's part of what this is about. You didn't just become your colon cancer. You were a man of faith. You were a man of intelligence, and so you used all of that to help yourself fight a battle that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And so palliative care, my feeling is that palliative care should be a right of every person in this country.
And I want to interrupt you for one second.
Please.
To also mention this, because you mentioned the social work part of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting because I didn't have the social worker part of it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, one thing I found out later was how it was affecting my family,
yeah.
Right? I think that if we would have had a social worker that was working with me and my family and my daughter, I think they might have been able to deal with it differently, because I didn't know.
Sure.
Once I got better, right? Then slowly I got to figure out, like, wow, you know, what they were feeling.
Right.
Right? Because somehow I was so immersed into trying to get better and also trying to make them feel like to not worry.
Right.
That I didn't understand that even though I did all of that, right, that they were still going through,
sure,
something, right? Having a social worker could have helped.
Yeah.
And I'm just mentioning that just because you mentioned that that was also part of the team. Great. You know, thank you. Okay. So how does your foundation then raise money and then focuses on where to spend that money, right?
All right. Well, I was very, very fortunate to have, first of all, the support of Jen Capo, who's the chief of the service. I mean, I don't do anything without her.
Okay.
She and I talk on a regular basis as to what her needs are.
Yes.
And where, what things need to develop. And so we are helpful, and I'm hopeful can move the needle at Yale New Haven Health so that it becomes, palliative care becomes available not just to people in Smilo and not just end of life, but it becomes something that's across the board in the hospital. It goes from pediatrics to geriatrics. It goes from heart disease to whatever, think of a disease that this becomes available. And what that means is that the service at the hospital needs to grow. And how does the service grow? It grows by training more and more physicians and more people who are part of the team, because it is a specialty that for physicians, they come to it after they've finished their internships and residencies in other specialties. And a lot of people come out of geriatric medicine with this.
Okay.
And one thing that's important to distinguish is palliative care should be looked at like a lovely big umbrella. And at diagnosis, one gets involved with a team that helps them. And you may not need help. You may not need it for years.
Right.
But it's offered. It's there.
Yeah.
And at the other end of the umbrella, we will all at some point die, whether it's the disease that we are diagnosed with, a major disease, or it could be something else. But if it's the same disease at diagnosis, then there is hospice at the other end.
Mm-hmm.
And hospice is part of palliative care. They are not synonymous.
Okay.
Palliative care is supportive, as is hospice. Hospice is one of the most important things that is offered to a dying patient and their family. But palliative care sort of gathers all of that together under one umbrella and supports, again, the patient and the family.
Great. So you have an event.
Yes. Actually, you know what we did?
Yes.
And I should have told you this. A banner's going to go up in New Haven, and you'll see it, and it's... And it was going to be Living Well, but a friend of mine said to me as we were working on the banner, and my friend of mine said, this sounds like an insurance convention. It has to be something that sort of captures the imagination. So I was driving my car after being, you know, that landing on my shoulders, and I thought, oh man, what again? And then I thought, to life. Because that's what this is. It is to life.
Right.
And it is to a life that we live more abundantly.
Yes.
And we do it in a variety of ways. And palliative care is something that can help with that abundant living.
And, you know, what strikes me the most in this conversation is that, you know, simple, but, you know, like, while you're still alive, like, life is happening.
Right.
Right? And so why not make that the best possible? And that's what strikes me in this conversation.
You know what it is?
Because, you know, like, because life, in some cases, life ends even while you're alive just because you're going to die. And you and everyone knows you're going to die, right?
Yeah, but you know what we have to do? Here's what we have to do. Here's what we have to do.
Yes.
We have to live life until we die.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm getting.
That's it. Right. We live and
you need help with that.
And you need help with that. You need help with that from your religious community. If you were fortunate enough to be part of a religious community, you need it from whatever fellowship one is a part of, it is essential.
Yes.
But we live until we die.
So you decided to raise money through gospel music.
Well, all right. So I have to come clean on this one. Many years ago, Langston Hughes's Christmas play called Black Nativity, this was a long time ago, I started working on that because it's such an amazing piece of poetry, and that there's a flexibility to it, and it's in two parts. The first part is the Nativity, and the second part is, the second half is the fulfillment, is the resurrection.
My favorite poet.
And it is and he is gentle but searing in his love and his intellect and everything. Yes. And I met a young man by the name of Jonathan Berriman who we decided that we sort of did a play reading of it at Long Wharf, and it was wonderful, and it was celebratory and fabulous. And then I said, I really want to do a full production of it. And I had this sort of image of what it was. And happily, Jonathan Berriman, who is an extraordinary musician, the Heritage Chorale is his chorale.
Yes.
And he is a man of infinite faith and tremendous intelligence. And, well, in any case, I could go on and on. He brought together to me a group of local gospel singers that, and he said, just come together and I want you to talk to this woman. She has an idea about doing Langston Hughes's Black Nativity. And just come and sit and talk to her and we'll see if we can get it. So I walk into this room and I was the only Caucasian person in the room. And of course, I sat down and I started talking. And I said, I think the thing that made everybody come on board, which was every night we are going to take the audience to church. We will take them to church. And I could see everybody just buy in because these are gospel singers. They're religious and observant and all of that. And so we created this sort of fellowship of really inspired and inspiring singers and actors, and when we produced it at Long Wharf for a number of years. And my husband, one of the favorite pieces that was done in the play that we did, and what Hughes does is you can put any music in that you want to.
Right.
And Jonathan knows the canon of gospel, mm-hmm. be it old time or modern. And let me see. And Eric Brown sang, what is it? Oh, my soul. Wait. When the storms are raging in my life.
Yes.
And my husband, who was a wonderful, sweet, loving, interesting, fascinating man, he loved that song so much and loved the way Eric did it. And so, and we're Jewish.
Right.
But, you know, you just feel it. I mean, you just feel, and my soul is anchored in the Lord, all of that. And
yes.
My husband was not necessarily a religious man, but he believed in the Spirit. And so there was all of that felt so real and so wonderful. So we decided that we needed to do, we're starting to do outreach into the community, and there's a disparity in understanding of what's available and what is good. So let's get rid of the disparity. Let's educate the New Haven audience, and let's do it in a way. Now, how are we going to get them in there? One of my kids used to say about my husband's writing, Daddy gives you a bowl of oatmeal to eat, and he hides raisins in there. So you go from raisin to raisin. So the gospel concert is a raisin. It is a raisin to people that love that kind of nourishment.
Yes.
And gospel music and everything. And so this event is free and open to the public. It is at Battelle Chapel. It is on Saturday, the 18th of November at 8 p.m. Jonathan Berriman's Heritage Chorale is going to be our sort of anchor chorale. There'll be a full sort of ensemble, bass and piano, organ and saxophone and horn, and the actors that I worked with in Black Nativity, who are local people. And so the lion's share, the majority of the evening, will be gospel and singing, but we're also going to give the oatmeal, which is understanding what palliative care is.
Yes.
And how it is accessed and what it will mean for all of our lives, because none of us get out of this place alive. If we're fortunate enough to live to be old, you know, then we have to deal with what it is to age, all of those things. So
and I want to let my audience know that if someone that you know did not hear this show to find out what this is all about, then you need to come to this event.
And you do.
If you come to this event, you're going to be able to get all the information and then some, right? Because we weren't able to cover all of it today about what this service offers.
But more importantly, all right, so here's the point. What does the gospel talk about? The gospel talks about that my soul is anchored in the Lord, and God will take care of you, and these things that are important and move in all of our lives. But God also wants us to be active in our lives and to know and to learn and to use what will help him help us in our lives.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much for coming. May I just say that I've not been a follower of yours, but I love listening to the conversations that you have with people that walk into your studio. And it's a pleasure to be here, and it's a pleasure to reach out to the community of Greater New Haven and say, please come on November the 18th. To Battelle Chapel here in New Haven and celebrate with us and do a little learning. It's not going to hurt.
Thank you again for coming.
Thank you.
Juan Castillo with you. I know you've been inspired today. I know I have. This is the Electric Drum. We will see you next week.